podcast series, Driving Patient Equity and Access in Cellular Therapy, The Cord Blood Way. I'm Vidya Ramraj, Project Manager within the Customer Ready Products team.
And I'm Annie Dirks, Senior Solutions Development Specialist with Be The Match Biotherapies.
We are going to be your co-hosts for today's segment. At the National Marrow Donor Program, Be The Match, our true north is to ensure that all patients have an opportunity to receive the life-saving or life-extending treatment that they need. We continue to promote awareness and build strategies around all of our cellular therapy offerings because a patient's journey and their needs evolve along with their disease. We have two eminent physicians joining us today, Dr. Heather Stefanski from the National Marrow Donor Program, Be The Match, and Dr. Ronit Cementov from Gamida Cell, who will help us understand the power of cord blood and its evolving role in improving patient access to innovative therapies. The National Marrow Donor Program, Be The Match, lists more than 266,000 cord blood units from domestic member cord blood banks, represents 500,000 units on its upfront searches, and has visibility into over 800,000 units worldwide through cooperative registry relationships. Further, cord blood being immune privileged allows for greater matching flexibility that can overcome HLA barriers. This means that for patients with a low likelihood of a perfect 10 of 10 related or unrelated donor match, cord blood can extend the availability of transplant, particularly those patients who are ethnically diverse. This is evidenced by the fact that ethnically diverse patients utilize this graft source 38% of the time. So how does umbilical cord blood that used to be discarded as a medical waste able to help treat over 70 plus life-threatening diseases? As a global leader in research focused on advancing the future of care, how is the Be The Match CIBMTR partnering with leading institutions, physicians, and cell and gene therapy providers to advance cellular therapy research? What does it mean to expand the accessibility of data that can be used to drive better treatment decisions and support innovative therapies using cord blood? Continue listening to learn more. Our first guest today is Dr. Heather Stefanski. Heather Stefanski, MD, PhD, joined the National Marrow Donor Program, Be The Match, in May 2021 as Vice President, Medical Services. Prior to her arrival, Dr. Stefanski was an Associate Professor of Pediatrics at the University of Minnesota and was actively involved in clinical care and research involving children with life-threatening blood and immune system disorders. One of our areas of focus is the use of cord blood units in stem cell transplants and other cellular therapy. She's both certified in both pediatrics and pediatric hematology oncology. We're so excited to have you here, Dr. Stefanski. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for inviting me. I'm very excited to talk about one of my favorite things, which is cord blood.
So let's dive right in. Before joining the National Marrow Donor Program, you spent over 15 years treating patients at the University of Minnesota. Is there a special story of a patient who has a second chance today because of cord blood that you can share with us?
Well, it's really hard to choose one patient because while I was at the University of Minnesota, I treated many leukemia patients, and all of my leukemia patients got cord blood as their stem cell source, unless they had a matched sibling. So it's hard to choose one, but I have a number of patients where it was very hard to find a match. And in fact, cord blood was the best match for them, and it truly did save their lives.
Thank you so much. And, you know, we constantly hear stories, and if I may quote, there is a recipient who received a double cord blood transplant for sickle cell disease. And in her own words, she says, "When I was little, there was no cure for sickle cell. I didn't know if I would live to be 18. Cord blood transplant gave me hope and led to a cure. Thanks to the people who donated that baby's cord blood, I got a second chance at life. I was reborn." And it's amazing to know that now she's in her 20s, which has graduated from college and plans to pursue a career in medicine. cord blood does save lives.
Yes, it's so exciting. And when you talk about the double cord blood transplants, you know, originally cord blood was done for children because at that time it was thought that you could only give one cord blood unit. And it's based on the number of stem cells that are in each of those units. And patients need a certain number of stem cells in order for those cells to grow in the body and to what we call engraft. And so cord bloods were only done for kids for a long time. But then it was thought, well, what about a double cord blood transplant? And that is why now adults can get double cord blood transplants and they're able to use that as a stem cell source.
That is fabulous. And you led right into my next question, because I was wondering, since the first cord blood transplant happened over 33 years ago in France for a patient with Fanconi anemia, who received the cord blood transplant from a sibling, I was wondering, what are some of the greatest advancements since then? And how do you believe cord blood transplantation has evolved?
So cord blood transplant has definitely evolved to expand to allow access to so many more patients. And the way it's done that, you know, first with single cord blood transplants, then we did double cord blood transplants. We are also able to make many other types of cells from cord blood. So we can make cells called natural killer cells. And those cells are very important in fighting cancer and tumors. And they have been used in multiple clinical trials in order to try to prevent relapse from cancer or to cure cancer. With cord blood cells, we've also been able to make something called T regulatory cells. These cells are very important to actually prevent and treat graft versus host disease. So it's been found that if you don't have a lot of T regulatory cells in your body after stem cell transplant, you could be at risk for graft versus host disease. And by giving these cells back, you could potentially treat graft versus host disease. Other advances with this, you can make all sorts of other types of cells. You can make T cells, which can also be important for the immune system and fighting infections. You can use the stem cells for potentially doing genetic modifications and doing gene therapy. So where I see it, there's so much potential. And when we go back to that sickle cell patient, what would be really amazing is if you could take that, like if that patient had her cord blood saved, you could potentially go back into her own cord blood unit and make that gene modification so those cells no longer had that sickle cell defect, and then give that back to her as gene therapy. One of the other things, one of the disadvantages of cord blood is that it takes a while for the cells to grow in the body. And that's why a number of centers and a number of physicians don't feel comfortable with cord blood, because it is harder to engraft and it takes longer. And so patients potentially have to be in the hospital. So, and another way that we can use cord blood is to expand cord blood, which will be talked about a little bit later.
That is, wow. I'm learning so much here, and I can't wait to learn more. So now that you are in NMDP, this is being on the other side of the transplant center world. So can you tell us a little bit more about your current role at Be The Match and what cord blood related strategies and services or organization plans to make available so that we can ensure that this invaluable graft source continues to be accessible to patients?
Sure. So my role is Vice President of Medical Services, and I do a lot of things. But one of the things that I am passionate about is the cord blood. And what I did not know as a transplant physician when I was at the University of Minnesota is that we had these cure-ready cord blood units that were available to go the next day. And what these units are is they are already have confirmatory typing, so you don't have to wait for that. And literally, if I had a patient that needed a cord blood unit the next day for whatever reason, and they had a match in one of these units, we would have gotten them the next day. Other ways that we are ensuring that cord blood is available is really education. I think education is so important to the transplant community, and that if they don't have a matched sibling donor, that there are other things available besides unrelated donor peripheral blood stem cells. You know, there are umbilical cord blood units that could potentially save that patient's life.
So thank you so much, Dr. Savansky. I actually, even though I work at Be The Match, I just learned a whole lot of new information from you that I did not know previously. So thank you so much for that. I have the privilege of introducing Dr. Ronit Simintoff, who is another guest panelist that we have here. Ronit Simintoff is a hematologist-oncologist with over 15 years experience in the pharmaceutical industry, leading development of oncology therapeutics. She is Chief Medical Officer of GametaCell, a cellular therapy biotechnology company. So welcome, Dr. Simintoff. We are so happy to have you here with us today to discuss the future of the use of cord blood.
I'm delighted to be here. Thank you.
So based on your experience at working at a biotechnology company and your vast experience in general within the world of medicine, where do you believe the use of cord blood will be heading in the next 10 years?
Well, you know, I think that cord blood has been used successfully for so many decades, but it remains an underutilized resource despite its successful history. And that's based on the major limitation of cord blood transplant, as Dr. Savansky mentioned, which is the low stem cell dose. That leads to a longer time for the immune system to recover in the patients, higher risk of complications such as infections, and a longer time in the hospital. So to address this, efforts have been made to expand cord blood stem cells ex vivo, in other words, in the laboratory, and then give those to patients. And the technology has been developed. Omidubicel developed it, GametaCell, where I work, is produced from cord blood using a nicotinamide cell expansion technique, which increases the number of stem cells while retaining their ability to be stem cells. In other words, retaining their ability to create new blood cells in a patient forever. And this is something that has been given to patients in clinical trials. And in fact, transplant with omidubicel has been shown to lead to faster immune recovery, fewer infections in those patients, and a shorter time in the hospital. So overall, I anticipate that development of technologies such as that one could potentially increase the use of cord blood throughout. And I'm looking forward to the day when that happens.
Thank you. That is very insightful. So as you have described, you know, the use of cord blood is being used sort of as a starting material that then can be made into something else that can treat a variety of patients with different sort of indications. Knowing that, we would need to engage with several different cord blood banks, as they all have different inventory and different characteristics of their units that they have. Do you see any challenges in working with multiple cord blood banks, knowing that they all don't do things in a very consistent way?
I do. You know, the cord blood banks are critical partners, not only for the transplant centers, but also for us in industry. And we've had productive collaborations for cord blood banks for years as we've developed omidubicel with cord blood as a starting material. But the experience is not consistent from bank to bank. Forms and processes are not standardized. Sometimes there's information missing that's very important that necessitates a lot of back and forth. Sometimes, as Dr. Savansky mentioned, additional testing is needed to confirm suitability. And that takes time. It sometimes takes a different amount of time depending on what bank we're working with. And the process may differ, and the capabilities of the banks may differ, the offerings may differ. Overall, it's a very hands-on process where logistics have to be managed very carefully in order to bring the cord blood to the patient or to the production facility.
Thank you. So as you did raise an issue around something that banks do not do their processes all equally and maybe even offer different characteristics of their cord blood units, what are some of the solutions to this issue? Would you say it could be, you know, maybe engaging more closely with the banks to inform them of what the future of cord blood is and see what they could be doing to maybe across banks collaborate together to make a more consistent process.
Absolutely. I think building communication and partnerships is really important. And perhaps this could be done in a sort of collaborative way, pre-competitively, across multiple industry partners, across institutions, and including Be the Match, where everybody could benefit from the ability to collaborate and prioritize the important things that are necessary in order to develop cord blood inventory and processes that would help everybody.
Great, thank you so much. Yeah, I totally agree with that as well. The more close collaboration we can have with all parties, institutions, you know, companies such as yourself and the cord blood banks all working together to promote the efficient use of cord blood units as we use them today and also going into the future, I think would be very beneficial for everybody, specifically the patients in need. Well, now I'd like to ask both Dr. Stefanski and Dr. Simintov each kind of a final question as we wrap up here. So Dr. Stefanski, I wanted to check in with you on, are there any other opportunities that you see for the future use of cord blood in the near future that maybe we have not touched on?
Yes. One of the things that has been expanding rapidly is the use of what we call CAR T cells, which are chimeric antigen receptor T cells. And what they are used for, depending on what sort of CAR T cell they are, is to they're specific for a type of cancer. So the common ones have been the CD19 CAR T cells, which have been used for acute lymphoblastic leukemia in children, as well as lymphoma in adults. And there's a number of products that are now FDA approved. Well, there's no reason that we can't make CAR T cells from umbilical cord blood. And I think that could be very beneficial because a patient, in thinking about expansion, you could expand stem cells, and then you could take a portion of those stem cells and make them into CAR T cells. And then what you would do is you could eventually give both of these products to the same patient. So they would get a stem cell transplant with the expanded stem cells potentially. And then you could also try to prevent the leukemia from coming back by giving the CAR T cells. So I think that's a novel way of thinking about it, or giving natural killer cord blood cells after a transplant, or within the same product, would be very beneficial. And I think it's going to be exciting to see what the next 10 to 15 years hold. So the NMDP is committed to democratizing cell therapy and ensuring that cord blood is available right now as a stem cell source for patients that need it, and also for the future, for new therapies that we have not even thought of.
Thank you. Yes, I totally agree that this is such an exciting field for the looking at the use of cord blood and its potential future indications it can be used for. So Dr. Simintov, I'd like to ask you the same question. Do you have any final thoughts on the future use of cord blood that you can see from more of a biopharmaceutical perspective?
Absolutely. There's enormous potential for cord blood. And I think an important priority for us in the field is to increase collaboration and education. I think there are opportunities for education of transplant centers and physicians and medical centers in engaging in accommodating a broader range of cellular therapies, expanding the services, the understanding of how to process cells and administer them, broaden them to increase access in locations that currently aren't able to offer those. Education, I think, is a really important priority for us as a field. And of course, increasing the inventory of cord blood is also what I think is a major priority, particularly for rare subtypes and for rare genetically diverse populations. Thinking into the future for development of other cell therapies, it would be wonderful if we could collaborate with the banks to do selective testing for sort of custom parameters. Maybe there was a way to identify units suitable for cell therapy development or for new ideas and research. There would be a way perhaps to do an inventory search of different cord blood banks to search their inventory for cords with specific criteria that could be suitable for something that we could be used, that can be used for development of something new and novel. If we could eliminate some of the back and forth and allow for more expedited search, whether that search was for a specific patient who needed a transplant now, or the search was for cords that could meet the criteria for a novel therapy, I think that would be a great way for the cord blood banks to collaborate with industry and with organizations such as Be the Match to bring the best possible product to patients.
Great. Thank you so much. Vidi and I would like to thank Dr. Stavansky and Dr. Simintov for their time and expertise today. During our conversation, we were truly able to gain insights for how important the use of cord blood is and how we as a transplant community, both at the hospital and in from industry, can continue to move the use of cord blood into the future. It is a very exciting time to think about all of the possibilities of potential cord use has to offer, not only as a graft source for transplant, but also in the creation of innovative cellular therapies to serve all of our patients in need. So thank you again, Dr. Stavansky and Dr. Simintov, for your time today and your valuable expertise in educating us on what we're doing today with cord blood and also discussing all of the future possibilities that are out there for this precious stem cell source.